Welcome to the Bible's Greatest Mysteries from Skywatch TV. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I am Sharon Gilbert. We pray that you're having a wonderful January. I know we are. 2022 is off to a great start. As we've told you before, we record these 2 months in advance. So if we're not mentioning stories that are obvious and you're screaming, why aren't they talking about this or that? It's because we're recording this in November. So we're talking about November stories. But the biggest story of all, of course, is L.A. Marzulli and the things that he's been looking into for years and years.
Yeah, his research has just been so exciting as he's dug into everything from megalithic structures, from the mound builders here in North America to the giant's tombs of Sardinia, Gilgal, Rephaim, and the Golan Heights, the megaliths of ancient Peru, the elongated skulls, and the UFO phenomenon.
He's looked into all of it, and he's also looked into the serpentine structures across the world.
Yes, that is a theme. That is a symbol that is very ancient and is worldwide, and not just serpents, of course, but dragons.
Yes.
And as we found in the research for our book, Giants, Gods, and Dragons, not only are there the dragons that are mentioned specifically, like Leviathan, the beast that emerges from the sea. I know in Revelation 13, it doesn't look like we expect a beast to look. It's got leopard, bear, lion stuff, but that's how dragons were described in ancient Mesopotamia.
Exactly. At the time that they were written, you have to get back to context.
Right, right. And so that's what they would have expected back in ancient Mesopotamia. But we've also got the flying fiery serpents of Isaiah and Numbers, and the fact that Seraphim and Nakash, the serpent in the garden, were used interchangeably in some of those verses in Numbers and in Isaiah. What else is a flying fiery serpent but a dragon?
Gotta be a dragon.
We've got this this simile, and we argue then that this image, this serpentine image and the image of the dragon is very ancient. It was adopted by the Mesopotamians, but it comes from a spiritual reality that that's how some of the denizens, the residents of the spirit realm, actually look. So it's not a surprise we find so many pagan religious sites adopting that serpentine imagery.
And sadly, there are a lot of modern pagans, neo-pagans, who are going back to that old idea. And it's just a sign, I think, that Jesus is going to be coming soon. And speaking of soon, here comes
the
bag. The bag.
Well, as we address these issues, and I know we haven't had time to really dive into any questions here in the last couple of weeks, but we'll have some episodes devoted exclusively to answering your questions, and so forward those to us.
We are
keeping all of them and archiving them, and we will be bringing them out, bgm@skywatchtv.com.
Exactly. Probably in February, we'll have a couple of shows that are just you and I sitting and talking about various things. You can tune those out if you want to. We often tune ourselves out, but we love talking about this sort of thing. And last year, last week, we talked about a place, an archaeological site that was discovering stone heads and probably the earliest depiction of a human head that has been discovered, and it's in Turkey.
Karahan Tepe.
Of course, you and I are going to go to Turkey this year sometime, and you can find out about that if you go to the Bible's Greatest Mysteries.
It's Bible'sGreatestMysteries.tv is the website, Bible'sGreatestMysteries.tv. We'll have information there, also information about our Israel tour.
Exactly. And so, you know, you can also go to SkywatchInIsrael.com, but it's getting a little complicated, too many URLs. The bottom line is, if you want to know what's going on with us or any of the programs that we do, GilbertHouse.org has everything. Everything we do is right there, GilbertHouse.org. There's a story that came out just recently about decapitated statues of Greek deities, and we're talking about Aphrodite, Venus, Dionysus, and they've finally been reunited with their heads.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, when these statues are discovered, they had no heads, and so the heads were found separately. As to why the heads were separate, it's not known. It is not known. And the reason I bring this story up is because discussing the idea of neo-paganism, that's going back to the old veneration ways of communicating with the fallen realm. Well, one way that you communicated with the fallen realm was to interact with its statue. It's sort of like going to a television set.
Mm-hmm.
It's a receptor. It's a way for them to interact with our space and time.
Yeah, that's a common misconception that we have. We've often been taught in church that pagans in the ancient world venerated or worshipped the statue itself, but the statue or the idol was a tuning device mm-hmm. to bring that deity into a space that you could visualize. It was,
yes.
It was to give it locality. And I think you put it very well. It's like a television or a radio.
Or even a portal. I mean, it's a way to give permission, because free will is the key.
Mm-hmm.
You give permission by interacting with this statue. Well, what I asked you this morning when we saw the story, as we were looking through our lead sheet, we looked through the folders, we have to, otherwise we wouldn't know, was whether or not when you put them together, does that somehow give the power back to the statue?
That's a good question. I don't think it does, because I think it depends on human free will. That's mm-hmm. the key element
I agree.
In all of this. God,
but if you've got a broken TV, does this still work? If you've got a broken statue, does this still work?
If you believe it, it does.
That's really the key, isn't it?
It is. When it comes to the pagan world, if you believe mm-hmm. it does. If you, I think if you recited the phone book with the intent of contacting the spirit realm,
that would be a spell that worked.
That would be a spell at work, because
yeah.
you are giving permission to those entities to enter. In other words, the portal to the spirit realm is not really that idol or that spell. It's what you're doing. It's your heart, the human heart.
That yeah. is so true. Well, L.A. Marzulli, he talks about this kind of stuff all the time. And I think this week he's actually going to get into the serpentine structures.
Oh, yeah. There's some really fascinating ones here in North America and in Israel, as we recently discovered.
Yeah.
L.A. Marzulli is next on the Bible's Greatest Mysteries.
With the official disclosure of UFOs moving full steam ahead, very few will be prepared for what is coming. The answers are now available in Josh Peck's groundbreaking new Skywatch Films documentary DVD, over 10 years in the making, entitled The Great Delusion, The Second Coming of Earth's Oldest Enemy, along with Dr. Thomas Horn's documentary-style expose on DVD, Rome and the Star God, and the late Chris Putnam's Vatican presentation on DVD, Astrobiology and the Vatican ET Connection. Josh Peck's new documentary, The Great Delusion, reveals for the first time why the Vatican is in possession of a telescope named the Lucifer Device, why the ancient and mysterious Anasazi suddenly disappeared from the historic record, how alien abductions might be connected to the sixth chapter of the book of Genesis, whether there is a secret alien-human hybridization program being conducted on Earth right now, if there is a connection between aliens and supernatural entities such as demons and fallen angels, and what we can do to prepare for what's ahead. You'll also see stunning reports on the UFO phenomenon by Dr. Thomas Horn, Josh Peck, L.A. Marzulli, Timothy Alberino, Nick Pope, Chris Putnam, Chuck Misler, and many more. You'll also receive Dr. Thomas Horn's documentary-style expose, Rome and the Star God, on DVD. Join Dr. Horn for this incredible expose on how the Vatican is not only willing to accept our alien brothers with open arms, but are actually enabling the arrival of the end-time Star God, the Antichrist. But that's not all. We're also including the late Chris Putnam's shocking presentation entitled Astrobiology and the Vatican ET Connection on DVD, detailing the Vatican's plans to baptize aliens upon their arrival, and how contemporary societies will soon look to the aliens to be the saviors of humankind. Sold separately, these items have a retail value of $75. Yours now for your donation of only $35 plus shipping and handling while supplies last. Prepare for full disclosure with The Great Delusion special offer. Available now at SkywatchTVStore.com. Order now or call 1-844-750-4985.
The Bible's Greatest Mysteries is part of Skywatch TV. Follow us online at skywatchtv.com.
One of the things that's always puzzled me, L.A., is the similarity in architecture and symbolism around the world by civilizations that you would think would have nothing at all in common, opposite sides of the planet. You look at let's say Cambodia, you've got step pyramids there, step pyramids in Mesoamerica, step pyramids in ancient Babylon. In fact, Sardinia, Monte de Coti, there's a step pyramid there on the island of Sardinia, which makes no sense. But one of the symbols that we find around the world is the symbol of the serpent. Now, you've done a program, one of your series of Watchers DVDs on the Serpent Mound in Ohio, and then just thanks to Google Earth, we sort of stumbled onto this giant serpent-shaped ridge that's a quarter of a mile from Gilgal Rephaim on the Golan Heights.
Coincidence.
What is it with the serpent and this recurring symbol of a serpent around the world?
Well, in my opinion, this is the dragon's signature. It's the symbol of Satan. It's the dragon's signature. New Agers will tell you, like, going back to the Serpent Mound in Ohio, where the serpent, and this is a paper that I wrote, based on what Gary Stearman was talking about, which triggered Mark Hirschman, who was an amateur archaeologist, who was just at the Serpent Mound 48 hours before he listened to Gary Stearman's thing on the Nephilim Mounds conference, where it was all about the seed. And having just been out at the Serpent Mount, it was very fresh in his mind. And he came up to me and said, L.A., I think it means this. And I extrapolated on that. Well, when you go to the Serpent Mound, the serpent undulates. Again, it's 18.5-year lunar cycle, showing the precision of the equinoxes, solstices, lunar, the whole deal. But the mouth of the serpent is open, and the mouth points to, which is what was a stele there at one point. It's now toppled over. We were in the process of trying to convince them to let's resurrect the stele, let's bring it up. We'll hire a crane, we'll pay for it. Just can we clean it up and see if there's writing on it? We believe that there was human sacrifice there. But the mouth of the serpent is open like this, and in front of it is an egg. Most people agree that it's an egg of some sort. So the New Agers tell us that the serpent denotes wisdom, and it's in the act of birthing the egg to mankind. And I wrote a paper on this. I should really post it on the academic sites and get it peer-reviewed, because it's completely different than it's 180-degree opposite of what they think. No. That's the seed of the woman, and that serpent is in the act of attempting to swallow that egg.
Uh-huh.
It's Genesis 3:15 screaming at us from this outcropping in Ohio. What's that doing there? Well, you go to other places, like you mentioned. The serpent motif is everywhere. When you go down to Peru, you see the flying men of Paracas, and they're very bizarre looking, extremely bizarre looking, and they have trophy heads, trophy skulls, in their hands. Out of their mouths are coming serpents. I mean, they're entwined with serpents. The serpent iconography is through the roof. Going over to Egypt, look at Pharaoh's crest with the cobra.
The Uraeus, yeah.
It's everywhere. It's absolutely everywhere. And there's a reason for this, because it all goes back to the dragon. It shows us that all this knowledge was given in all these different areas, and it acknowledges the giver of that knowledge, in my opinion, which, of course, is the dragon, and his symbol is the serpent. One more. We were at a place in Ohio, called Fort Ancient. And I'll never forget it. My wife, Peggy, has an app on her phone which enables her to look at, it's like a star chart. So, you know, you can go like this and look at all the constellations. So we're there at the vernal equinox, the spring equinox. We're there deliberately that day. We also were at the Serpent Mound. There was a coven of witches at the Serpent Mound. Gee, what a coincidence. They know exactly what that site. And I could digress. Kunbat's men, we talk about this in Amateur of the Nephilim, Secrets of a Supernatural, Voices from the Other Side. 13 crystal skulls, 2012, Mayan elders, all there. Oh, they're opening up the gateway. We actually show it only for a few seconds because I don't want that in your home. They're all going like that. They're opening the gateway at the Serpent Mound. Circling back, so Peggy and I are there with Fritz Zimmerman at Fort Ancient. This is 3.5 miles of continuous earthen wall, 66 gates in it, right? Thousands of years old. And the entranceway to the site, there are two mounds there. So Peggy goes, gee, I wonder what's going on there. So this is the equinox. Directly over the mound, right dead center of the gate, dead center is the gate, is the constellation Hydra, the serpent. It's like, you know, we just looked at each other and just, it's everywhere. It's deliberate. It's deliberate. And Native Americans didn't know this. They didn't travel in this. You know, and 3.5, just to give your listeners an idea, modern-day archaeologists insist that Native Americans built these mounds with these primitive tools, clamshell hoes and the shoulder blades of a deer and stone tools. Okay, fine. So we hired a flint knapper to make a replica of a stone hoe. We did. We hired a laborer. He went out, and we show him digging. We show it, and I think it's the first Mysteries of the Mound Builders. And he's digging with the hoe, I guess, and he gathers up the dirt and puts it in a bucket. We gave him a bucket instead of a birch bark basket. And he carries this thing a couple hundred yards away to where the mound would be, dumps the bucket of earth, and then stomps it with his feet. Well, we show this to people at conferences. They just erupt in laughter, and rightfully so. So one mound, let's say, that's got 3.5 million, I'm sorry, 3.5 miles of continuous earth and walls, when you deconstruct that, and you put all that dirt in trailers, dump trucks, you have 200 miles of dump trucks end-to-end, bumper to bumper. A mile I can get, but 200 miles of dump trucks end-to-end, and we're supposed to believe that they did this? No. We're looking at the fingerprints of a supernatural that construct all this. And once again, it's serpent motif absolutely everywhere.
One of the things that that we've discussed previously, and I know we're in agreement on this, is that the spread of this all points back, when you trace it back, it goes back to the Middle East, Mesopotamia, mm-hmm. that the Amorites appear to have mm-hmm. something very important to do with this, one of the neighbors of ancient Israel. Mm-hmm. They were believers in the chief god Baal, who Jesus in Matthew 12, verses 22 through 24, identified as Satan. Mm-hmm. But we also see in Scripture the clues in the Old Testament where the Nakash, the serpent of Genesis 3, the word Nakash used interchangeably a couple of times in Isaiah and also Numbers with the word Seraph, the singular of Seraphim. Mm-hmm. So the Nakash Seraph, flying fiery serpents, which suggests a dragon.
Right.
But we've talked about the Amorites before and this similarity in some of the architecture and symbolism, again, the step pyramids, for example, that seem to spread out from Mesopotamia and across the world. What would have led to, assuming that theory is correct, and that this people group that appear to have been sold out to these fallen entities, what would prompt them to just flee and just spread across the world?
Well, this has been our hypothesis from the get-go, that when Joshua and Caleb press the conquest of the promised land, and they're given that mandate, wipe everything out. We talked about this in a previous show. So they do this. I mean, there's no doubt about it. They don't get all of them, but they get most of them. And after Jericho, word goes out that this is the guy. This isn't just, it's a whole different deal, because it's a supernatural event that occurs. And so we believe that there's a diaspora. In Lost Civilizations, one of our lead archaeologists, Mondo Gonzalez, talks about a stele on the shores of northern Africa, which
You're
talks
right.
about that we are those who fled from Joshua, the son of Nun, the robber.
Mm-hmm.
They call him the robber. We are those who fled from Joshua, the son of Nun, the robber. We're not making this up. There it is. A stele is carved in a stone. Ding,
right.
ding, ding, ding,
right.
ding. So it's not going anywhere. There it is.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at that, there was a diaspora from the Levant that pushed westward. Also, we also believe it might have gone down the Red Sea and out that way. It could have gone westward, it could have gone south and out the Pacific Ocean and settled that way, also winding up in Peru. Our DNA evidence, which is on the Trail of the Nephilim number 6, and we are the only, I'm boasting here, folks, I get it, but we're the only team that raised the money, that hired the labs, that went down multiple times, that had the archaeological knowledge to able to, that's Mondo Gonzalez's work, to actually create what we needed to do to get the permits. We took 58 samples. Out of the 58 samples, 28 of them sequenced. We went to 3 different labs. This is when they would take our money. Now they won't, because we're so controversial. And I get that. But science is science. And, you know, all we're doing is collecting the evidence and bringing it to you. In fact, people that looked at the videos commented on that out in the field, we went the extra mile. We had full-on lab suits, masks, gloves, goggles, hairnets, I mean, the whole deal, double arms. And for every skull that came in, and we did it from two different museums, we would change. We would take DNA, then we'd go to another room, completely stripped down from that, blow each other off with compressed air, don new suits, blow each other off again, and go back in and take new samples. You can't get any better than that out in the field, okay? You can't. People commented that that do this for a living. Well, we were instructed on how to do it from a DNA, paleo DNA lab up in Canada. So we have all these samples. We have no idea what we're going to get. Our hypothesis is that we should see DNA that points to a Middle Eastern origin. That's our hypothesis. But we don't know. There's no dog in the hunt. I mean, the machine has no dog in the hunt. The machine is a mindless thing which is spewing out data based on what you put in, right? So out of the 58 samples, 28 of them sequenced, out of the 28 sequences, the mitochondrial DNA showed Middle Eastern, Eastern Europe, European DNA. That rewrites history. They didn't like that. The powers that be didn't like that. The Peruvian government said it's all contaminated. And our response, if it was contaminated, then why didn't you find nuclear DNA? And we took my DNA and Mondo's DNA, and sure enough, one sample had my DNA in it. It was contaminated. That was thrown out. But we never found nuclear DNA because it's the further back you go, the DNA becomes degraded. It's very difficult to coax nuclear DNA out. So we, you know, and our team was the only team that we are aware of in the secular world and in the Christian world that actually did this. And we know some guy at UCLA purportedly went down and did that. But when pressed and asked, well, how many elongated skulls did you actually sample? He stopped communicating with us. And here's the kicker, and this is our anthropologist, Rick Woodward. The morphological differences of the elongated skulls in Peru show that these are not, they're not human anymore. I can say that with 100% certainty. Are they Nephilim? I don't know that. But they're not human. So what we see, what the heck are these things doing in Peru? And they appear out of nowhere about 3,500 years ago when that conquest of Canaan begins to happen.
Right, right.
That's when they show up. They may have had the wheel, which comes from the Middle East, pre-Columbian. It doesn't exist in Peru because we find pottery that's very, very fine, very fine. And you can only do that on some kind of a wheel. You can't, you know, take roll the clay and then make a whole different deal. And it's very elegant, and it turns. It was done on a wheel. So we think that what we're looking at here is a Middle Eastern connection. I mean, the science bears it out. That was our hypothesis, but then the DNA, you know, bears out our hypothesis, you know, and more testing needs to be done, but the labs won't take our stuff, so what can I say?
Now, I just want to point out to clarify that the stela that L.A. is talking about that mentions Joshua the robber, the son of Nun, was found on the coast of Tunisia, which is not that far from ancient Carthage, but it would have predated the arrival of the Phoenicians from Tyre, who set up the colony at Carthage by about 600 years. So these were people who fled.
What's it doing there?
Right, six centuries before. And that actually relates to symbolism that we found on the island of Sardinia, where we found those sacred wells in the keyhole shape representing the goddess Tanit, who was the consort of Baal Haman.
Here we go.
The equivalent of El and Asherah in the Levant.
Do I have time to talk about Baal, the Baal stone at America Stonehenge?
Please, please.
So America Stonehenge is a 4,000-year-old site in Salem, New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. So we're not in the Middle East anymore. We're in Salem, New Hampshire in America. And there's a collapse chamber, and there's an amateur archaeologist who's there, Mr. Goodall, and he sees, they start digging around, and he finds this stone. And they know that the stone has some writing on it, but they have no idea what this says. And it lays in the museum at America Stonehenge for 11 years. And Dr. Barry Fell, a professor of Harvard University, gets wind of this. He comes out, looks at the stone, and goes, that looks like Iberian Punic. I think I can translate it. So they translate the stone. They know what it says, but they don't know anything about the Nephilim. So I arrive on the scene, and I'm like holding a little Osmo camera, and I'm following Kelsey Stone around, and he's showing me all these different items, and it's great B-roll, and it's just wonderful with Kelsey. And he goes, and in the display case, this is where we have the stones with all the writing on them. Oh, great, Kelsey, what does this one say? And he goes, I'll never forget as long as I live. And I'm holding the camera, and he goes, oh, this says it's an Iberian Punic, and it says, to Baal of the Canaanites in dedication. And you hear this long pause in the film, and I go, what did you just say? I can't believe what I'm hearing. And he goes, Tubal of the Canaanites in dedication.
And found in New Hampshire.
And it's like, even in Lost Civilization, we bring that back because it's just so important for people to understand that that's not a hoax. That's not a hoax. So let me get this. I'm gonna write Iberian Punic on a stone buried in a chamber and let it sit there for 11 years so I can, you know, really fool everybody. Nonsense. This is the real deal, and it's in New Hampshire. They were everywhere. They were everywhere.
The Serpent Mound in Ohio.
Yeah, well, it's called the Great Serpent Mound, but you showed L.A. what you discovered when you were working for the video of our travel documentary for the second trip we did to Israel. Mm-hmm. When we got to go into the actual area of Bashan, place of the serpent.
Exactly. Just a quarter of a mile from Gilgal Rephaim. Mm-hmm. We drove right past the Serpent Mound of Bashan. It's three times longer times higher than the Great Serpent Mound. And we were literally a stone's throw away, but we were all looking out of the other side of the Jeep.
It's only when you saw it overhead, you went to a map system, Google Earth, to actually vision. And he called me into the room. He said, what do you see? Well, I see a big serpent. It's huge.
But the fact is, the ancients must have known what it was because, as the archaeologist who's excavated on the back of that ridge discovered, there are some 140 megalithic burials, most of which have not been excavated yet.
Here's the thing. There are military installations at either end of it.
Right, right.
As if someone knew during the 1967 war that we can't mess with these cairns. These archaeological cairns that are on top of it.
Yeah, they put the tank emplacements at the end of the snake instead of doing anything
Isn't
on the back of the snake.
That
is interesting.
We don't have time to talk about all that. We can talk more about it next week.
Oh, we will. But fascinating site that's more than almost 6,000 years old, actually far, far older than the Great Serpent Mound in Ohio, which was just recently redated to about 300 BC. But add another zero and some change, and that's the Great Mound, that's the Serpent Mound of Bashan. But we will go back there, find out more about our Israel tour, skywatchinisrael.com, and you can see that for yourself and actually walk on one of the Bible's greatest mysteries.
Yes.